In 2014, Gwyneth Paltrow and Chris Martin made headlines not just for their separation, but for how they described it, conscious uncoupling. The term instantly sparked cultural debate. Was this new age nonsense or genuine wisdom? Behind this celebrity moment stood Catherine Woodward Thomas, a licensed marriage and family therapist who had been developing this approach since 2009. Her book, Conscious Uncoupling, emerged from her own experience ending a 10-year marriage with kindness rather than destruction. Unlike typical relationship books that focus solely on finding or keeping love, Thomas tackles the reality that nearly half of marriages end in divorce, with even higher rates for subsequent marriages. The approach has resonated deeply with those seeking dignity in separation. Katy Perry credited Conscious Uncoupling for helping her maintain a healthy relationship with ex-husband Russell Brand, and countless non-celebrities have found in these pages a roadmap through heartbreak that leads not just to healing, but to genuine transformation. None of us walk down the aisle expecting divorce. When relationships end, we often feel like failures, experiencing shame, that toxic feeling that we are fundamentally flawed for violating social expectations. This shame causes us to isolate ourselves precisely when we most need connection. Our brains crave predictability, receiving dopamine rewards when expectations align with reality. When they don't, as in breakups, we experience stress, cortisol spikes, and emotional distress. This explains why relationship endings feel so devastating. They violate our deeply held cultural narrative about love's proper trajectory. But where did this happily ever after ideal originate? While fairy tale motifs appear in ancient literature, the specific happily ever after ending only emerged as popular in 16th century Venice. Before this cultural shift, marriage wasn't about love or happiness, but about survival, land, trade, and power dynamics. The Venetian romantic ideal emerged under two extreme conditions. First was a life expectancy under 40 years, with 60% of Europeans dying before their 16th birthday. This created unspeakable grief as half of all children died before growing up, making happily ever after a powerful aspiration. Second was the rigid class structure, with laws forbidding nobles from marrying commoners, trapping most Venetians in poverty. These literate but poor citizens found escape in fairy tales that offered magical stories of upward mobility and happy endings. It's time to reconsider whether this myth has outlived its usefulness. Dating and marriage customs have constantly evolved throughout history. Anthropologist Dr. Helen Fisher notes that serial monogamy has become the norm, with most people having two or three significant relationships in their lifetimes. With divorce rates at 40% for first marriages and higher for subsequent ones, perhaps changing partners should be considered normal. For the first time in history, more people over 50 are divorced than widowed, with silver seekers over 60 becoming one of the fastest-growing demographics on dating sites. Rather than judging relationships solely by longevity, we might better ask what wisdom we've gained. Americans maintain high marriage rates despite high divorce rates, showing our persistent belief in love despite acknowledging its complexities in modern life. When love fails, it often becomes tragedy. The brain circuits controlling reward and rage are deeply intertwined, which explains why rejection can trigger extreme behaviors. Dr. Helen Fisher explains that the same brain region activated when falling in love becomes even more stimulated when rejected, creating a frenzied state similar to drug withdrawal. Our brains are hardwired to increase desire for the one we're losing rather than letting us move on sensibly. Love's opposite isn't hatred, but indifference. Hate creates a negative bond as strong as love, keeping us tied to former partners. Our brains, wired for survival and connection, resist letting go of attachments, even toxic ones. Dr. Louis Cozzolino explains that our brains prioritize safety over spiritual aspirations, and UCLA research shows rejection triggers the same brain alerts as primal threats. This explains why breakups can manifest as contentious separations, where people become obsessed with revenge, like the woman who spent 17 years pursuing her ex-husband's money. When you've deeply entwined your identity with another's, separating quickly becomes nearly impossible, like untangling matted hair. Without proper care, hearts heal crooked, closed, defensive, and easily bruised, the emotional equivalent of walking with a permanent limp. While heartbreak won't kill you, shutting down and hiding from love can lead to joining the ranks of the living dead. It's one thing to lose your beloved and another entirely to lose yourself. Though it may seem insensitive to suggest transforming breakup into breakthrough amid tidal waves of hopelessness and despair, this excruciating pain holds promise for unprecedented wholehearted awakening. Heartbreak brings you to your knees, shaking loose every lie you've lived with, forcing you to confront fears you've denied. Every instance of giving away power, denying deeper knowing, or settling for less is up for review. As Leonard Cohen wrote, "There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. The only way to outrun the sorrow is to use the fierce pain to catalyze your awakening and become who you were born to be." Conscious uncoupling is a breakup or divorce characterized by goodwill, generosity, and respect, where those separating minimize damage to themselves and their children while creating new structures that help everyone thrive. These breakups are marked by kindness and genuine efforts to overcome our primitive biological impulses to lash out when hurt. Our brains are social organs designed to connect with others. Our attachment circuitry links up to regulate our emotions, making us dependent on our lovers. During breakups, we lose this regulation system, triggering fear responses that hijack rational thinking precisely when we need it most. Conscious uncoupling requires understanding karma not merely as cause-effect punishment, but as action-seed-results. Each choice plants seeds that grow our lives in particular directions. Rather than sowing bitterness and revenge during breakups, we can plant forgiveness and generosity to cultivate future abundance. The goal isn't justice or vindication, but freedom to create happiness beyond the relationship. Generosity, sharing the same root as Genesis and Generate, initiates new life and breaks cycles of reactivity. Unlike codependent giving with hidden agendas, true generosity asks nothing in return. One powerful example comes from Doju and Lucio's separation after 30 years of marriage. When Doju needed to leave their Buddhist marriage, despite Lucio's devastation, he drove her to the airport and, with tears streaming down both faces, bowed deeply to bless her journey. This act of grace still moves her years later. As Buckminster Fuller said, "You never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete." Conscious uncoupling isn't about fixing a broken system, but creating a new paradigm for healthier relationship endings. While many aspire to friendly breakups, few overcome our brain's tendency to perceive separation as life-threatening. The five-step process serves as a blueprint to bring out our best during one of life's most challenging transitions, similar to how Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's stages of grief provide a roadmap through loss. The first step of conscious uncoupling teaches us to harness wild, dark emotions, rage, hatred, fear, despair, transforming them from destructive impulses into constructive drivers of positive change. We create conditions to move beyond painful patterns in love, using this shattering as an opportunity to radically evolve how we live and love. Breakups can knock the wind out of us faster than a sucker punch to the heart. You may be experiencing trauma symptoms just as surely as if you'd been the victim of a crime. Dr. Judith Herman of Harvard Medical School puts rupture of attachment on par with a bad car accident or death of a family member. Studies show those in painful breakups display identical brain patterns to those grieving a death. When love provides shelter from life's storms, where can we turn when our most intimate relationship becomes the threat? All breakups represent a violation, an eviction from our emotional home that leaves us feeling unsafe, vulnerable, and afraid. The end of love often brings spiritual disorientation, as our framework for making sense of life shatters. Like Dara, a devout Christian who couldn't pray or attend church for a year after being cruelly dismissed by the one she'd waited for, you may experience what psychologists call a schema fracture, when your worldview proves insufficient to handle trauma. Experts say our first task after trauma is restoring safety. Yet after a breakup, we've not only lost safety in our beloved's arms, but may struggle with frightening impulses that make us unsafe even with ourselves. When overwhelmed by emotions, we may act out in desperate ways. Research shows that simply labeling our feelings can help us regain control by decreasing activity in the amygdala, our emotional center, while activating the prefrontal cortex, our rational brain. Rage contains powerful seeds of awakening when properly channeled. The immense energy of fury can fuel positive transformation when redirected towards standing up for your own value and refusing to tolerate mistreatment. Breakups often trigger intense anger because they rewound us in ways similar to past hurts, the ultimate betrayal from someone who was supposed to heal, not reopen our old wounds. As Thich Nhat Hanh observed, anger is like garbage that can be transformed into nourishing compost. The energy of rage can catalyze long overdue changes, establishing boundaries, speaking up for yourself, or abandoning people-pleasing behaviors that undermine your worth. Depression following a breakup serves a natural purpose, slowing us down to prevent hasty separation from our sources of connection. Scientists have discovered that we're neurophysiologically designed for interdependence, with our biological systems actually synchronizing with loved ones. When attachment bonds break, our bodies respond with grief that honors the sacred nature of connection. Our interpretations of breakups often trigger more suffering than the separation itself. The pain activates our source fracture wound, original heartbreaks from childhood that created false conclusions about our worthiness. Without adult guidance, we developed stories like "I'm unlovable" or "everyone leaves" that now compound our grief. Though these painful narratives feel true, we can access our adult wisdom to challenge these assumptions and create more empowered meanings. In the second step of conscious uncoupling, we shift from being wounded victims to taking personal responsibility for our part in what happened. This liberates us from repeating painful patterns and empowers us to evolve beyond disappointment in love. After a breakup, we obsessively craft narratives about what went wrong, typically centered on how we were wronged or how we brought heartache upon ourselves. These victim-based or shame-based stories keep us trapped. The key question must become, where is my attention? Turning away from finger-pointing to examine our part in the dynamic. Even if your partner was 97% at fault, unless you own your 3%, you'll never trust yourself in love again. Self-reflection shouldn't lead to shame, what's wrong with me, but to growth. For every narcissistic partner, there's someone who chronically self-abandons. For every critical person, there's someone desperately seeking approval. Reclaiming your power means asking honest questions about how you've given your power away or shown up as less than who you are. Making amends to yourself requires identifying resentments, taking responsibility for your contributions, recognizing the pattern's costs, and committing to growth beyond self-defeating behaviors. The process asks crucial questions. What has it cost you to give your power away? What amends do you need to make to yourself? What new skills must you develop to live differently? Though you might feel compelled to immediately apologize to your ex-partner, check your motives first. Is there a hidden agenda for reconciliation? As Viktor Frankl noted, suffering ceases to be suffering the moment it finds meaning. Sometimes we can't undo damage, but can commit to never repeating those patterns. The path to forgiveness isn't rushed. As Dr. Frederick Luskin explains, forgiveness is the last stop of our suffering, after we've fully processed our remorse and committed to change. By transforming heartbreak into meaningful growth, you reclaim your power and create purpose from past mistakes. The third step of conscious uncoupling invites us to recognize and break free from our repetitive patterns in love. When relationships end, we often feel our worst fears confirmed, that we're unlovable, destined to be alone, or somehow fundamentally flawed. But these painful endings actually offer an opportunity to identify and heal our deepest wounds. Our tendency to recreate painful relationship dynamics stems from what Thomas calls our source fracture story, the meaning we gave to original childhood hurts that became our underlying narrative about ourselves and love. These unconscious beliefs act like a distorted inner compass, leading us to make choices that validate our skewed perspectives. Like Sarah, who grew up with an emotionally unavailable mother and developed the belief, "I am alone, others always leave," we often unwittingly sabotage our relationships by acting from these old wounds. Sarah avoided all conflict with her husband, presenting only a carefully crafted image rather than allowing authentic connection, ultimately recreating the very isolation she feared. We unknowingly perpetuate our painful patterns in relationships, like Emily, who preemptively ended things with Rick when he went silent, only to learn years later he'd been contemplating deeper commitment. We often create the very abandonment we fear. To break these cycles, we must examine how we've contributed. How did you treat yourself in ways that validated your core story? How did you covertly set your partner up to disappoint you? How did your worldview shape your actions? The death of love can awaken us from the trance of false beliefs formed when we were too young to understand complex situations. These beliefs aren't random. They emerged from painful experiences with those we depended on most. Now, with adult perspective, we can challenge these distortions. Stephen Gilligan notes that a negative experience returns until human presence is brought to touch it with love and acceptance. Happy relationships aren't about finding the perfect person, but developing the inner and outer capacities to sustain healthy intimacy. Our painful patterns persist not just because we're trying to heal the past, but because we simply don't know how to create different outcomes. By identifying how we've been setting ourselves up to lose in love, we can learn to show up differently, standing in our value, setting boundaries, speaking truth, and building trust. Most of us missed crucial developmental skills in childhood because our source fracture stories convinced us they were unnecessary. Like Sarah, who learned emotional literacy in adulthood after years of isolation, we can develop these missing capacities at any age. This breakup offers a profound opportunity to adopt a beginner's mind, embracing vulnerability and uncertainty as you learn the specific skills needed for healthier relationships. As a love alchemist in step 4, you'll learn to honor all stages of your relationship while setting conscious intentions for a positive future. You'll dissolve residual anger, communicate in empowering ways, and create healthier dynamics moving forward. Catherine shares how creating an intention for the future is essential when uncoupling. Like building a bridge between worlds or building a plane while flying it, this intention serves as a North Star through difficult transitions. She illustrates this with Janet and Chris Atwood's story. Despite divorcing due to sexual incompatibility, they set an intention to remain best friends and support each other's success. This led them to become business partners and best-selling authors. Like alchemists transforming lead into gold, we can transmute breakup pain into something precious, not by adding something, but by releasing what no longer serves us. Forgiveness isn't a feeling, but a decision made from our strongest self, a perspective to adopt and practice. When wronged, we face the ultimate character test. Will we respond from vision or react from victimization? Though biology triggers rage after betrayal, our consciousness allows us to respond with dignity. This requires loosening our grip on righteous narratives about being wronged, recognizing that our stories are filled with subjective interpretations rather than absolute truth. Studies show we recall events through the lens of our pre-existing worldview. Freedom comes from releasing the obsession with who did what to whom, and instead practicing forgiveness. Unresolved emotions like remorse, regret, guilt, and shame become fixed within us after poorly navigated breakups. Catherine shares her own experience with her boyfriend Frank when she was 18. Rather than properly ending their relationship when he tried to prevent her from attending college, she made an impulsive pact to reunite in their 60s. This ill-fated promise haunted her for decades, with frequent dreams about her lost love. Clean completions involve three essential parts: acknowledging what your partner meant to you, appreciating the gifts they brought into your life, and making amends, either directly or by committing to not repeat past mistakes. This isn't about reconciling differences or winning arguments. It's about creating closure that helps everyone thrive. When Robin and Gary ended their 19-year marriage, their children began showing signs of distress despite the parents' efforts not to fight. Children intuitively sense tensions regardless of what's said. Through a conscious completion process, Robin listened as Gary shared his feelings of inadequacy from her constant emotional demands, while he later heard her express the loneliness she felt in their marriage. By genuinely hearing each other without defensiveness, they transformed their relationship from resentful to supportive, which immediately improved their children's well-being. After a breakup, adopting a more formal way of relating gives both parties space to adjust to new circumstances. While maintaining necessary communication for shared responsibilities like children or business connections, Catherine recommends granting your former partner privacy and respecting their process. The liberation that comes with relationship ending offers surprising relief and opportunity for reinvention. Catherine encourages readers to see this space as a chance to recreate life aligned with deeper longings and authentic interests, building on what was learned in the former relationship. Catherine explains that relationships are built on agreements, some conscious, others assumed, that define our emotional investment and expectations. These agreements can unconsciously bind us long after relationships end, as illustrated by Emily, who remained celibate for 10 years after divorce because she was subconsciously honoring her marriage vows. To truly move forward, we must identify agreements that no longer serve us. Promises like, "I will never love anyone like I love you," or expectations that your former partner will always be your emotional rock. Catherine explains that unmet expectations trigger dopamine drops in our brains, creating ongoing pain. The solution is to consciously create new, more appropriate agreements that honor the relationship's changed form, whether as co-parents, friends, or simply people who once loved each other deeply. When relationships end, social networks often fracture, as friends and family feel compelled to take sides. Catherine shares Sophie's story of wisely redirecting friends from criticizing her ex-partner Mary, reminding them that both needed support rather than division. Catherine explains that social rejection activates the same brain regions as physical pain, citing Dr. Eisenberger's research showing that being excluded lights up 5 different pain-processing brain regions. Rather than allowing loved ones to ostracize your former partner, Catherine recommends consciously creating community cohesion. True friendship is earned through kind, selfless gestures that build trust, not simply a convenient alternative to being lovers. Catherine distinguishes between the authentic philia love Aristotle described, wishing well for another for their own sake, and the self-preserving impulse to avoid the existential pain of separation. She advises a clean break of several months to detox from love's chemical addiction before attempting friendship, maintaining clear boundaries by avoiding physical touch, flirtation, or using each other as emotional confidants. Catherine vulnerably shares how her personal journey toward conscious uncoupling began when she refused to include her husband's ex-wife, Anne, at Thanksgiving, causing her stepdaughter, Sarah, to miss time with her sister. Reflecting on her behavior, Catherine later changed course, inviting Anne to all holiday celebrations. This eventually led to beautiful outcomes, including her daughter asking if Anne could be her godmother, creating an eccentric and ever-expanding happily ever after family. Catherine shares her own downsizing experience, moving from a beautiful 4-bedroom house to a moderate 2-bedroom apartment in a building where her ex-husband lives 5 floors below, making co-parenting seamless. While acknowledging the financial reality that divorce typically causes economic downturn, she warns against letting fear drive destructive behaviors like hiding assets or manipulating custody for financial gain. Catherine explains that divorce celebrations aren't raucous parties, but deeply personal ceremonies that honor relationships. She shares examples like a couple of 40 years who undid their vows in a labyrinth ceremony, and another young couple who exchanged rings on the beach where they married, placing them in a box for charity before sharing a meal with friends. Catherine reminds us that after all our tears, we deserve joy. Not necessarily the joy we'd hoped for, but the lightness that comes from living authentically and embracing new possibilities. Quoting Orson Welles, she notes, "If you want a happy ending, that depends, of course, on where you stop your story." She encourages readers to close this chapter of their lives and reach toward new life and love awaiting them beyond sorrow.